Jason, you win some, you lose some, and then sometimes you tie. That's what Ben Johnson did. And we'll talk all about it here on Hallis Intrigue. Jason, Ben Johnson just coached his first game of any kind. It was a preseason game. It ended 24-24 at Soldier Field against the Dolphins. Did we learn anything?
We learned that there's no overtime for preseason games.
That's fun.
I was not aware. I don't think you were aware of that before this because it just hadn't come up. First time the Bears have tied a preseason game since 1973. The part about that that is okay with me is that it really doesn't matter who wins or loses preseason games anyway in terms of your evaluation. I do wonder, how does that work in Vegas? I guess the spread factors in, so right. Somebody does win in Vegas. But what you're looking at today is a Bears first string that's basically entirely on the bench. The only starters, the only guys that are listed as first string players out of 23, I think, on offense and defense on their official depth chart were Tyreek Stevenson, who might have been there as a punishment, might have been there because he's in a position battle. Did you get an answer on that?
I did. It was a position battle. It had nothing to do with him fighting.
So he's fighting metaphorically with Nashawn Wright and Terrell Smith for that second starting cornerback job opposite Jalen Johnson. Braxton Jones also started because he's battling Ozzie Trapillo for that spot, and Colston Loveland started at tight end because he's a rookie. So no Caleb Williams, none of the main skill players, not much of the main offensive line, not much of the main defense. You're not seeing how they're going to play TJ Edwards and Tremaine Edmonds together and things like that. What do you extract from this? I think you see all the rookies play, except for Shamar Turner, of course, because he's injured. And you're looking for, do these guys look lost or overwhelmed? And mostly they did not. Mostly they looked like they were prepared for this. Luther Burden had an illegal formation penalty. And Ben Johnson did say afterward that Luther Burden is not where he needs to be right now, that he likes a lot of the work he's putting in, but he is not where he needs to be in terms of reliability at this moment. But you saw Colston Loveland look really solid out there, had a nice catch for 8 yards on the opening drive. And you did see Luther Burden with a really heady play at the end of the first half where he catches the ball. They snap it with 6 seconds left. He gets them into kicking range, gets out of bounds with 1 second left so that they can kick a 57-yard field goal. And Menangai was 5-6 carries for 30 yards and kick return as well. All those guys, Ruben Hippolyte at linebacker, all those guys looked like they belong. Mm-hmm. And they're going against predominantly second stringers, but they didn't look lost out there to me, Patrick.
No, and in a game in which your starters aren't playing, that's kind of naturally the thing that we all look toward is, okay, how about these new guys? And, you know, we asked Ben afterwards, like, whether he trusted them, and he said, you know, trust is no, I don't yet. But, you know, there's another word, and I said hope, and he said, more than that. It's somewhere in between, and I think that is okay for this time of year. I thought that, I'm not sure that you can learn too much about Ben Johnson's offense from today. It was all pretty vanilla. But boy, there were a couple of pretty clever play calls in there that I think if Luke Getsy had done it, we'd be like, oh, look at that. To me, the big takeaway is kind of the intensity that the Bears have in this guy. And, you know, we don't know whether he's going to be good. We thought Matt Nagy was going to be good, and we sure as heck did after the first season, too. And, you know, that had a pretty short life cycle. And, you know, the Bears have this habit of hiring people who have never been coaches before and then expecting them to know how to be the head coach. So we've been fooled before. But I really like the intensity that's coming from him. You know, there was the 4th-and-1 touchdown pass from Bajent. They cut to him on TV as he was calling the play-in. And he called the play-in, and then there were a lot of other words after that. And I asked Ben afterwards, do you remember what you said? And he said, I was told that it was a family day and there were a lot of kids, so no, I can't repeat it to you. And, you know, Bajent then said, you know, he said, go throw a bleeping touchdown, or we need the bleeping score, something like that. That's, I think, an insight into the fieriness of the guy. And that's only notable to me in that he's replacing somebody who did not wear his emotions on his sleeve at all.
And Matt Eberflus ever. Ben Johnson also, you know, one thing that needed to change here, Tyson Bagent was talking about the experience of being Ben Johnson's quarterback during a game, and among other things he said about it was, he said it's very efficient. Mm-hmm. Play calls in right away, and it's really clear. Mm-hmm. There's no hesitating. There's no ums and uhs and what, and give me a sec. Like, it is in right away. There is no holdup on that end of it, and that is really going to help Caleb Williams. One of the things that offensive play callers talk about all the time is getting to the line of scrimmage as early as possible. You still have time to see the defense. You still have time for the coach to adjust things because the headset doesn't cut out until a certain point before the play clock. There's a lot gained by just simple efficiency of process before the snap. It's kind of alarming. It was kind of alarming that the Bears struggled with that under the last how many coaches? I mean, going back to Nagy, Nagy's teams had trouble with that, with the play clock. And Caleb Williams has had some issues with it in practice this year, but I think we know that it's not going to be because of Ben Johnson and not knowing what to do and not getting the call in fast enough.
I thought it was funny that he had said that when they were here at Family Fest, he figured out pretty quickly how much he hated other assistants talking on his headset, is that he wants it to be pretty quiet. And
who said that?
Ben did.
Oh, okay.
And you know, he said, I told the guys, you know, I don't want a lot of chatter there. And he seemed impressed. He talked about listening to Dennis Allen call in his plays and kind of the communication he had and how much he liked that. And Allen's a guy, again, who was a head coach in two different spots, who knows how to run things. So I think the efficiency there is good. You know, I think it's easier when you have Case Keenum, whose superpower, if he has one, is that he just kind of knows the answers to the quiz. I think it's easier to be composed when you've got a guy like that running it than even a guy like Caleb Williams. But yeah, that was good. And not that those problems have been solved, because I think you and I would both attest that in practice, you know, the number of times that there's a false start or there's a formation or, you know, Luther Burden goes in motion but goes the wrong way.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen too many of those. But there is still a full month left until the games start to count.
Let me ask you about the left tackle situation. That was originally put to be a three-way competition between Braxton Jones, Ozzie Trapillo, and Karan Amagaji.
Yep.
Amagaji was always the long shot and seems to be kind of out of the race now because of his injury. He probably would have been eventually anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Am I correct that going into training camp, your money would have been on Braxton Jones?
Yeah, I okay. thought and you, mine, and, you and I disagreed.
And yes. Mine would have been on Trapillo. But the reason that I kind of want to set that at the beginning is I want to know where you're at today after you've seen 3 weeks of practices / joint practice / preseason game.
I think I'm coming around on Ozzie.
Okay, and because?
To me, the most impressive part of the 4th-and-1 touchdown pass that Bagent threw was the fact that Braxton Jones just got his lunch eaten at the line of scrimmage.
By
a
backup.
Yeah, and there was a backup linebacker in Bajan's face within a second and a half, and he still managed to – he even said he didn't even bother looking to see who was there. He just kind of made his progression to his number two and just threw it up and hoped for the best. And, you know, that wasn't the last play the Bears ran in the first half, but that was the last play that Braxton Jones played. Mm-hmm. And you could certainly, you know, we'll have to ask around about it tomorrow, but – you know, you could certainly make the case the Bears saw that and went, nope, no more of that. And, I think I was coming from a position of, I thought that the Bears, if they had their druthers, would have wanted Braxton to win the job because of his experience, because of the fact that he might not have been a Pro Bowler, but he's a decent player for 3 years, and that you wouldn't have to live with the growing pains of a rookie at left tackle to start the season. You thought the opposite, which was that they handpicked this guy. And in Ozzie to come challenge him. And I'm beginning to think that, don't quote me on this, but that you might be right.
You know when I think we're going to see something is, I guess we think Caleb Williams will play in the next game.
Yeah.
Although it's hard to really say, man, because they're going to have a joint practice before that with Buffalo too. But let's say Caleb Williams is playing in any game, preseason or otherwise. They are going to put the guy out there that they think will best protect Caleb Williams.
Correct.
So I would think that if Caleb Williams starts next week, that Ozzie Trapillo also will start.
Well, and Keenum had a good line today. He said, you know, that he would playing in the third quarter and then at the start of the fourth quarter. And usually when you're there, you look at the line in front of you and there's a, you know, there's somebody out of position. And then there's a guy who's playing through an injury. And
it's scary.
And you go, oh boy.
And you're playing against a defensive front that is desperate to do something to win jobs.
And he said that he looked over at Ozzie and was like, all right, I feel good about this. And that he said that he could sense that things were good, you know, when he dropped back. And I imagine that that is about as flattering as a quarterback could ever be about a left tackle. I think that that's a good sign. Now, Ozzie compared to the usual back of the roster guys who play in the fourth quarter of a preseason game is different than Ozzie versus Braxton Jones. And I'm also curious, Jason, and I'm curious what you think. Do we think that Braxton's fully healthy? He took two veteran rest days in the first 2 weeks of camp. You know, he's been out there, but I think there's a difference between being able to play and being able to play the way you want to play.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. And I think that he is medically cleared to practice and play. So, like, the ankle itself might be structurally sound, mm-hmm. but I don't think he is at full capacity. And he said that it really interfered with his off-season training. It's understandable.
Well, and part of it was the Bears wanted him to gain weight because he's talked openly for years about how the bull rush is the way to beat him.
And when they say gain weight for that position, they mean legs.
Yeah, and then he breaks his ankle, right. And not only does that make it pretty impossible to gain weight, but right. what you're trying to do is lose weight so your ankle can recover faster and has less to carry around. It's just bad timing, and I don't know. On a personal level, you do feel for Braxton because this is a guy that was, maybe had he played the final month of last season healthy, I'm not sure that the Bears were lining up to give him a massive extension or anything. But, he was on the path to a strong second contract and setting up, his family for life. And now that's a little more uncertain.
But where I don't feel bad for Braxton Jones, that's a good point. But where I don't feel bad for him is he's had 3 years to make a convincing case. Mm-hmm. And it's never felt like that.
No.
I think we've gone into almost every draft, if not all the drafts since they picked him, thinking they could be looking for his replacement.
And that's because of where he was picked. I mean, he's a flyer that turned out okay. And
he was in the 22 draft. The 23 draft, I think they were looking for Paris Johnson, mm-hmm. and ended up with Darnell Wright, mm-hmm. an offensive tackle who very well could have displaced Braxton Jones at left tackle. And it was on the table, I think, again in 2024 with that ninth pick if they had gotten the chance to move up and get Joe Alt, or if they'd,
Shoot, Jason, they could have had Kelvin Banks. Had Kelvin Banks not been picked by the Saints one spot ahead of them this year, Banks could be the left tackle right now.
I think they would have. I think if Kelvin Banks had been there at 10, he'd be on the Bears instead of Colston Loveland. So Braxton Jones has not at any point kind of put that away.
Right.
And just had this runaway lead at left tackle to where the Bears can say, that is a problem solved. We don't need anybody.
Let's talk about Austin Booker real quick. We've gone long enough without it.
Wait, what year is it?
Austin Booker?
We're doing Austin Booker again?
Yeah, this is the second year in a row.
This is a rerun from 2024.
Yeah,
bunch of sacks in a preseason game?
Yeah, we thought for a minute that Ian Wheeler had a touchdown too, and I was having some serious Hard Knocks flashbacks there. Austin Booker, 3 sacks today. One of them was a strip sack. Fumble that the Bears recovered at the 3-yard line. Really good day for him, but I think to your point, preseason performance, as we've learned, does not portend relevance in the regular season.
No, we never heard from Austin Booker again.
No. And I mean, which is, especially when you look at, remember in Hard Knocks where, they're weighing whether to trade for the, who was the guy who went from the Patriots to the Falcons?
I know who you're talking about. Matthew
Judon.
Matt Judon.
Yeah, where Ryan Poles is thinking, should I trade for Matt Judon? And then at some point they go, I don't know, maybe Austin Booker's pretty good. And I don't think Judon had a good season at all, but you feel like the pressure was put on him there. 4 quarterback hurries, 3 sacks for 19 yards lost. That's a pretty good day at the office. The Bears had 6 sacks, including one by Dominique Robinson, Jason, who's also fighting for that edge rusher job, and another by nose tackle or defensive tackle Zach Pickens, and somebody whose last name is Cook, who plays safety, had a sack.
Alex
had a sack on a blitz at a pretty big moment. As we look at what in the world the Bears are going to do on third downs defensively, we know, I think, that Dennis Allen's going to be aggressive, but you know, that's kind of what you do when your front four can't get home. In a perfect world, I think Dio is going to be playing defensive tackle on a passing down, which means there's an opening for Dominique Robinson, Austin Booker, some dude who's not on the team right now, to rush the passer in very specific situations. Do you think the answer is on the team or not?
I'd like to see what's going on with Shamar Turner. I'd like to see what he looks like in a preseason game. I don't know if we're going to. He's been out since the first day of practice.
Yep.
With the ankle injury. So it'd be really interesting if he was back on the field, say, Monday and kind of ready to actually be part of things Friday in the joint practice and Sunday against the Bills.
I don't get the sense that that's happening.
No, we haven't heard that. It was interesting because Dennis Allen said at the time he didn't think that was too bad but of an injury, but it has been for sure.
Would you put Robinson? Would you put Booker? Who'd you stick on at end if it's 3rd and 16?
Well, if I'm Dennis Allen and it's right now, I mean, Austin Booker's earned the chance.
Yeah.
Let's see what he's got. I mean, this is a new defensive coaching staff in addition to the new offensive staff with Ben Johnson. Yeah. So, I mean, there's a whole new set of eyes and evaluations on all these guys, including Dominique Robinson and Austin Booker.
I think my big takeaway from their joint practice against the Dolphins on Friday and then the game today is I think their defense might be pretty good.
Yeah, and that's without Jalen.
Yeah, and I think that should be uplifting for Bears fans for two reasons. Number one, having a good defense is better than having a bad defense. And number two, maybe, I don't want to say it explains away, but it might better contextualize some of the struggles that we've seen the offense have on the practice field.
The defense has had just a wealth of talent in the secondary.
Mm-hmm.
They have 6 starting caliber corners. Which I just have never seen a team, I don't think. No team I've covered has had that depth at corner. And they've got really good safeties between Byard and Brisker starting and Hicks off the bench. I mean, they've got a really, really good secondary. Mm-hmm. And it just hasn't mattered that much because they haven't had the pass rush up front. In the Dolphins practice, you saw a pretty good pass rush and you saw it translate to a lot of big plays in the secondary.
Bears last in the league in sacks over the last 3 seasons. And I think they were, in 2022, they were dead last that year, and they were second from dead last the year after that, and middle of the road last season. But part of that is because Matt Eberflus was blitzing like crazy, and I don't think that that's the answer.
Well, he had to.
Yeah, I don't think that's the answer either. That's not what anybody wants to do.
Do watch, by the way, though, when it comes to blitzing. Again, that secondary is so good because there's a couple guys in there that are really good blitzers. Kyler Gordon, mm-hmm. we all know, and we've seen Jaquan Brisker do a lot of damage in practice off the blitz too.
to himself and others. Yes.
But we've seen Gordon and Brisker look really good blitzing, and Dennis Allen really having a good touch for when to call that. That's really a perfect defensive coordinator hire if you think about it, for Ben Johnson, a guy who has all of this experience, who has been so successful in that role and not above that role, where he's had 2 head coaching opportunities and it hasn't gone well. He's not leaving. Right. He's not going for another head coaching job. So you have a guy who's really good and probably not going anywhere.
I think that I have to remind myself with Dennis Allen, I agree with you that as a head coach, he's pretty forgettable. But you know that when Sean Payton decided to quote unquote retire, I mean, Dennis Allen was his coordinator, and I'm sure the Saints wouldn't have promoted Dennis Allen without Peyton's blessing. And you could argue that of the people walking the earth right now, there might be nobody you'd rather have be your head coach than Sean Payton. I think there is a what's the word I'm looking for, Jason? There's a pedigree there with Allen that I think we forget. Remember, he was Ben Johnson's age when he was the head coach for the first time. And we look mm-hmm. at Ben as some sort of whiz kid. That's exactly what Allen was when he went to coach some really bad Raiders teams for a couple of years. Cairo Santos, 57-yard field goal. We touched on that. Easier to kick in 100-degree weather, obviously. But, Jason, you had a nice tidbit in your story the other day about how he got better from distance, and it kind of has nothing to do with with what they set out to do, right?
It was kind of inadvertent work on his distance. So Cairo Santos, so you're aware, everybody listening, his priority is accuracy over distance. And that might not sound profound for a kicker. Of course, a kicker values accuracy. But what he means by that is he is not going to bulk up to have a longer leg at the risk of that kind of making him less accurate. Mm-hmm. Flexibility over strength, I guess, is kind of part of his training. So he has all these interesting stories every year, I feel, about where he practices in Florida. He was saying he lives in the Jacksonville area, and he was saying a couple of years ago, I think he practiced on just the worst field he could find,
right,
because it was comparable to what he kicks on at Soldier Field. This year, Cairo Santos and some other kickers were training in Jacksonville, and they just couldn't find a good field. The one they found was a turf field in a public park. That the issue was, the quirk with this field, Patrick, is that the fence behind the goalpost was not very far behind the goalpost and not very tall on either side,
okay,
of the field, either end. So at one end, if you kick a 30-yard field goal and blast it like you normally do, it's going to go into a pond.
Okay.
Ruined football. At the other end, if you do that same thing, it's going to go out into the road and get ruined that way. So what they did was they just were kicking from 50 or 55 yards, but kicking the way they would kick for the kick they're working on. So he's at the 50, trying to kick a solid 30-yard field goal, and it's not even getting all the way there. He's just kind of eyeballing, okay, does that look right? Yes, it does. But he said eventually we start making them.
Yeah.
He starts making these 50 and 55 pretty regularly, and he's made around that distance in games before. His career long, I think, is 53. And he starts making from 60 and 65. And I don't know that Cairo Santos is going to get called upon to kick a 65-yard field goal at Soldier Field, but it'd be interesting to see if that came up in a dome.
Right.
Whether he could back that up and do it in a game, because he said he, you know, the further you get, the more you have to kind of change your approach, and that's why those kicks get blocked a lot, is because you got to kick them low and you need maybe a little more of a run up to it. But he feels better about his long range kicking now than ever, and it's pretty cool. Even if it's in ideal circumstances, like today, Sunday, to see him kick a 57-yarder and have it be a no doubter.
Do we think there were alligators in the pond?
I don't think that. I know that. I'm certain of it.
As a former Florida, you and I have both lived in Florida.
I don't think there's a body of water in Florida that you could just swim in without a thought, including swimming pools.
And the Gulf of Mexico. I'm sorry, America.
I don't think the Gulf has gators in it. It has sharks.
No, yes.
Yeah. it's a pretty dangerous place.
Secondary
America's
question.
Swampland.
If you were a millionaire kicker on a strong contract, would you choose to live in Jacksonville?
If I was making what I make, I wouldn't choose to live in Jacksonville.
Jason, the Bears have the Bills coming to town this week. There's going to be another joint practice. Schedule is a little different this week in that the Bears go Monday afternoon, then have an off day Tuesday, then practice Wednesday, Thursday, before the Bills get here Friday morning. Then they'll play on Sunday night here again at Soldier Field. Maybe we'll even see Mitch Trubisky. What do you think?
Well, more importantly, we're going to see Josh Allen in that practice on Friday. And this is two good quarterbacks in a row for the Bears defense to test themselves against. I know Tua is not the best, but Tua brings a lot to the table. I mean, he's certainly above average, and he was the NFL leader in completion percentage last year. I mean, very accurate passer. It's not easy to have a practice against them where you get four picks,
right,
like they did. Josh Allen is another guy that has done so much. He's the reigning MVP, I believe. I mean, that is not going to be easy for the Bears to contend with. It's going to tell you a lot about where they're at. And the Bills, Ben Johnson pointed this out the other day, the Bills on both sides of the ball, a perennial contender.
Mm-hmm.
So really good measurement of where they're at. The Bills practice, I'm sure, is going to be tougher than the Dolphins won a couple days ago.
Do you want the score of the Bears-Bills preseason game last year?
Yeah.
33-6 Bears.
Wow.
The Bears also
it's
last
a big revenge game for Buffalo.
They beat the Super Bowl champion Chiefs, or Super Bowl runner-up Chiefs, 34-21. They beat the Bengals 27-3, and they beat the Texans, who made the playoffs 21-17. The only reason I'm telling you this, Jason,
Matt Eberflus might have won more preseason games than regular season games.
Eberflus won 8-2 in 10 preseason games over 3 years. It's a nice reminder that the outcome of the game doesn't matter whether you win, whether you lose, or Jason?
Tie.
Or whether you tie. Anyway.
A thrilling 24-24 tie. I don't think they're going to re-air this one on NFL Network the next day.
Great games.
Yeah.
It was the only game on TV. It was the only game being played in this time slot.
I think they'd pull one from last year first.
The Bears have plenty of melodramatic ones to choose from there. We will be back later this week to tell you all about the Bills and what the Bears' plans are for Caleb. Until then, you can follow Jason and I on social media. Check us out on the Sun-Times website. And if you live in town, buy a paper. He's Jason Leisure. I'm Pat Finley. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back again real soon.